Hello and welcome to the Pitt Mailbag Show from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. We're your reporters, Christopher Carter, and here with Abby Schnabel, talking all things Pitt and some other college questions in the world of college sports. Abby, as always, is busy covering everything under the sun. She just got back from the Women's Final Four, where she was covering Caitlin Clark, South Carolina, Dawn Staley, a lot of great storylines there. We'll get to that in a bit. But we got to, of course, lead off with Pitt questions that you all have sent in to us. We thank you for all those who always contribute to our mailbag episode. But we also thank our sponsors for this show, Mike's Beer Bar, the best bar in all of Pittsburgh. When you go to Mike's Beer Bar, there are over 500 different available beers. 300 of those beers are from the local area, and 80 of those local beers are available on tap. And as always, you can find it on the North Shore, right across the street from PNC Park on Federal Street. It's an amazing place to be. It's the best bar in Pittsburgh. More on them later. Abby, welcome back to Pittsburgh. You went to Cleveland. You weren't sure. You almost weren't there for a whole weekend with how close that first game played out between Iowa and UConn. And then you ended up sticking out for the whole weekend. How are you feeling after another big travel for you?
This one was easier because there was no planes involved. Not that driving's any better, but it's just, you know, a little bit easier for me to like get in and out when I'm not on a plane. So, you know, it was a good trip. I'm happy to share stories when we get to the question. I'm very grateful, especially as a woman in sports, to have been part of that historic weekend. Happy to be back. Happy to get into the thick of some Pitt football and Pitt basketball.
Awesome. We'll get right into some of those questions. And we take off with what was the biggest news item last week. You and I were there to cover it live as it happened. Ernie sent us in a question via email saying, what does Bub Carrington going to the NBA draft mean for Pitt, the Pitt basketball program? Now, looking at this, we talked about this a little bit leading into, we weren't sure if Bub Carrington would go to the draft or the transfer portal or stay. It was very much up in the air. And then all of a sudden, Tuesday afternoon, we all got emails saying there's a special announcement with a select Pitt basketball player and Jeff Capel. And we were all like, that's Bub Carrington. There's no other person who that is a quote unquote select player. And so it was either about, and you and I said this going into it, it's either about definitely going to the draft or definitely staying, which, because you don't just do that just for whatever reasons. And this announcement, I think that, you know, it was interesting. I think it was some nice pomp and circumstance done by Pitt to celebrate a guy that could end up being their first round pick as a program since 2013, when Steven Adams was selected after his first year when he went one and done. But I look at this at this and say, like, you know what? I do think, Abby, that this, you know, I think it's a good sign that Pitt's one of these teams that has a player. Is it going to absolutely hurt them next year? Definitely, because Bub Carrington was a huge asset to this team. He was your second leading scorer, one of your top rebounders, one of your top, he was your top assist man. There's a lot of things that he brought in that are going to be tough to replace. He was also a good defender. But at the same time, this is very much the world of today's college basketball. You cover it, I cover it, we see it all the time. People are going in and out all the time. When you get one and done players, yeah, it sucks that you can't keep them, but it also means that your recruiting is working and other players who could be one and done type of players see that too.
Yeah, I was a little confused at first about why are we doing a press conference for this when you know, like thinking back to last year when Blake Henson was testing the waters and he just, you know, posted on social media. Mm-hmm. So originally I was really confused, but then, you know, I realized that it's a lot bigger than just Bub Carrington in this moment. It is a huge celebration for the program because, like you said, it's been 11 years since they've had a first round pick, and even longer. There's, you know, he's a potential lottery pick. I don't know what the draft boards are saying right now. I haven't had the chance to look, but you know, this is huge for the program. Not only does it put them up on a national, bigger national frame, because you know, when Bub Carrington's name is announced, it will be Bub Carrington from University of Pittsburgh. Like, that's mm-hmm. huge. You see, yeah. You see all these blue blood teams who send so many guys to the draft. This is why they're able to get so many good players. So I think it's a great thing for the program. I think it's not a great thing for the team. If we can separate the two, just because the program, huge celebration, but this team, you know, it's very beneficial that he did it early and he did it when he did, because it gives Jeff Capel a great chance to try and fill that spot. But at the same time, this team had the chance to be outstanding next year. And I'm not saying they're not going to be a good team next year, but you know, we've talked about it ad nauseum at this point. If you return Bub, Jalen Lowe, Ishmael Leggett, Zach Austin, all those guys, you're starting at an elite point. It's not necessarily building up like you had to the past two seasons of guys who hadn't really played with each other that much. So great, great, great for the program. I'm happy for Bub. You know, that's exciting too. Like seeing everyone, the team be so excited for him. And he just had a smile on his face the whole time too. Like, it's very exciting. Great for the program. Makes Jeff Capel's job a little bit more difficult.
It does. And he even acknowledged that, you know, I forget it was your question when I think it was, he basically asked him, so what does this do now? Well, he's like, well, we need a guard. And it's just like there's no working around that. Like, there's no fancy answer. It's going to be like, yeah, Pitt's better off without Bub Carrington. Everyone knows that. And no one's trying to pretend that. But I think it's also, again, the balance of thinking through this and thinking like, hey, this isn't as simple as they don't have many more. It'd be if he would enter the transfer portal, that's a whole different blow. But this is now a celebration. Like, hey, Pitt got a one and done player. It hadn't done that in over a decade. And that's a sign of Jeff Capel's recruiting, going to work, bringing in guys. And now that might convince other guys who are one and done type of talents, like one Malik Thomas, who, you know, hasn't made his commitment yet and recently said that he's about 3 or 4 months away from even getting there. And Pitt is on one of the short list of places that he's visited so far. If Pitt were to get a guy like Malik Thomas, he projects to be another potential one and done type of player. You know, you get more guys like that, it gives you a better chance to win. And like you said last week when we were talking on this show, being a good program that's sustainable involves bringing in talent regularly. And that's what Pitt has to do, is to prove that this pair of Jalen Lowe and Bub Carrington, this wasn't a one-off, that Jeff Capel can keep pulling off this kind of high school recruiting. I think you're on mute.
Thank you. Finley was barking. I think, yeah, it's nothing but good for the program. It puts them on a higher light, having a player like Bub, who was in the national spotlight just about all season, and now he's going to hear his name at some point during the NBA draft. And with that, it will say Pitt next to his name. Great for the program. But it poses some transfer portal questions.
Absolutely. We're going to get right into those questions here. And in fact, Ross has a question here. Does Carrington's leaving change what should be Capel's focus in the portal? Abby, I'll let you start on this, because we kind of talked about the what if scenarios last week. And now the what if has happened. Does this change anything in your eyes?
So it changes the fact that you now have to recruit a guard, but I still think your priorities, Capel's priorities, should be the same. I mean, look, we're looking for a center, we're looking for a power forward, and we're looking for a guard now. And I still think that center is your priority, because you need to get as the best, if we're ranking like top tier, like you want out of the portal your best player to be that center, in my opinion. You can take a guy that is, you know, all the guys that they're going to get are good. Some of them might just not be ACC tested or Power 5 tested by the time they get to Pitt. But I feel like you need someone who's battle tested out of this center spot. You don't necessarily need someone who's battle tested and has, you want someone good, but you don't need someone as good as you want your center to be, because of the talent that they still have returning. Jalen Lowe, Ishmael Leggett, Zach Austin. Like, those guys can handle things. Like, Jalen Lowe and Ishmael Leggett is an amazing backcourt already, just the two of them. So you don't necessarily need a star in that guard position. So it's still, in my opinion, the center is still more important, because you need a guy who can battle down there. We haven't seen a guy that can battle down there. And I feel like if you get a guy who can battle down there, that allows a guy like Guillermo Diaz-Graham to play a little bit more of that power forward spot, because he has the flexibility of being able to hit threes. And yeah, he's good down low as well, but it allows for a little bit more seamless transition between some of those bigger guys if you focus on getting a really big center. I'm not saying you don't need to get a point guard. You still need to get a point guard. I'm saying your center needs, the Pitt center needs to be their best player that they get out of the portal, in my opinion.
I feel you on this because at the same time, like you said, it's not like Bub Carrington leaving leaves them without guard power. Yeah. Like they have it. And like, I'd argue Jalen Lowe was a better guard in the last month and a half for Pitt basketball. It was funny. I talked about that with other people that were covering, not just Pitt, but other people, other teams in the ACC. And they were like, Bub Carrington's really good, and he's the guy that projects better for the NBA because of his size and how he's probably still growing and the skill set that he has with that, with those things there. But Jalen Lowe is the more dangerous guy to play against right now in college basketball, just with his skill set seem to be around about. He's more dangerous as far as a facilitator. And I think Jalen Lowe has also shown the ability to hit some big shots this past year. So, like, whereas he's not going to be breaking Blake Hinson's three-point record anytime soon, he can hit some deep shots, and Ishmael Leggett can too. And they also have guys like Guillermo Diaz-Graham, who shot very well from deep this past year. I think that you're right. It's more important to still get a center who can work the paint, who can defend the rim, and can score at the rim. You know, be athletic enough to run the floor, but also be able to, you know, average about 10 points a game, get you 8 rebounds a game. You do that, I think you have a big answer, and that fills a big hole that has been on this roster since the departure of John Hughley a year and a half ago. So that's a big part of it. It doesn't mean that they shouldn't go out and get a guard. I think that they could use a sharpshooter that would allow guys like Jalen Lowe and Ishmael Leggett to be more facilitators from the guard position. And if they could get a guard who they could come off and kind of use like they did Greg Elliott and Nike Sabande in their tournament team two seasons ago, I think that would be an asset. But I'm right on board with you that the more important of those two things is getting the big man who can work the paint and kind of allow everyone else to just fill in their roles.
And again, it's you know, some people were questioning the timing of Bub's announcement just because, you know, they had not played a game in a couple of weeks by this point. Mm-hmm. But I think it was perfect timing for Jeff Capel and his crew.
I agree.
Because it gives them still a lot of time to find someone out of the portal who may not have even entered the portal yet. And I wonder how much that went into Bub's decision and timing of his decision, because you can tell he cares about this team. Mm-hmm. And so how much of that weighed into his decision? It does suck a little bit for Jeff Capel that two of his biggest targets did commit elsewhere this past week. But at the same time, there's still so much time in the portal, and there's still so many players, and you know, by the time this podcast goes out, the season will be officially over because the championship game will have been played. But at the time we're recording it, the basketball season still isn't even technically over. So
right.
Great timing. It gives a lot of room for Jeff Capel to find his pieces.
Absolutely. And Jeff Capel even said they did it to be advantageous towards Pitt. You're mm-hmm. absolutely right. It was very good for Pitt to happen there. I know some people are saying, well, if it was good for Pitt, you know, why haven't they recruited anybody yet? I think part of the process, and this was also something that played into the whole NIT thing, not going to the NIT. One, there was a lot of other factors in play there, but two, people are wondering why haven't they gotten anybody, you know, really good in the portal yet? I think part of it was Jeff Capel had to invest his time and efforts into seeing about Bub Carrington's future, and that's what they were primarily focusing on. Now they're making those moves, and listen, I think Pitt scored in the transfer portal pretty considerably in the past couple seasons, past three seasons even. And like Ishmael Leggett was definitely a great addition this past year. Blake Hinson and all the guys they brought in the year before that, Jamarius Burton the year before that, they've been good at finding guys in the portal. I think it makes sense to give them a chance to kind of work that a little bit further. We now switch teams to the football team, which the Blue Gold game is this Saturday at Acrisure Stadium. I think you can attend for free. Just sign up. I think there's a place online to sign up for Pitt fans. But if you want to go to that, we'll be there covering it live Saturday afternoon, 2 p.m. from Acrisure Stadium. But Jason asks, which football players are you paying the closest attention to for the Blue Gold game for this week? And I'll start with this. Abby, there's one player.
You're going to say the same one that I want to say.
Then I'll let you handle that.
Oh, no. Go ahead. Say it.
No. I'll let you handle that one because I'll say this. I think that a big part of what has to be seen in this upcoming thing, because I know who you're about to say, and there's a lot of good reasons to talk about it, and I'll chime off of what you say too. But I'll leave with this. All eyes will be on Cade Bell, Nate Yarnell in this offense. Mm-hmm. How smooth does it operate? How well do they throw the ball? You know, this fast-paced thing, does it work? How many turnovers do they have against Pitt's defense? And I want to caution everyone, this Pitt defense is running the same way that it has for every year that Pat Narduzzi's been there with Randy Bates. They are fast, they are aggressive, they're more coordinated, and that is going to lead to big plays for them because they're not going to be guessing where they have to go. They're going to know where they have to go. Pitt football's offense, they're still figuring out the pace of things, and that's part of the growing process. But iron sharpens iron. This could be a great way to show, hey, over the past month and a half of spring practices, this is how far the offense has come. Wait till you see this group when they come back in the summer and get to work in August. So I'll take the chalk answer and say Nate Yarnell and just this new Cade Bell offense. But who were you about to say?
Yeah, I think we were going to say the same name. I think one guy that I really think has the potential to impact this defense, cause turnovers on the offense, is Cruz Brookins, redshirt freshman, defensive back. Is that who you were going to say?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, okay. He's been spectacular.
You know, we've gotten to see glimpses of him in the practices, and we don't get to see a lot of the big plays, but I have been impressed with what I have seen from him, and so have the coaches. That is the name that I feel like is brought up in almost every single availability we've had. And not just by Narduzzi. We've heard it from Jacob Bronowski. We've heard it from a lot of different players. That is the name that I feel like comes up probably just as much as we're talking about Nate Yarnell and the other quarterbacks. You know, it's not just about how he's doing on the defensive side of things, but also they've been talking about him in special teams and how he's been standing out in special teams. And so, I don't know, I'm really just excited to see how he's able to really make an impact on the defense, especially with, like you said, offensively, they're still figuring out things. Cruz Brookins has had a year now. This is his second year in this defense, and seeing how he's able to expose some of those maybe mispractice or misthrows and the fact that they just haven't had a lot of time to implement Cade Bell's offense. I'm excited to see what he's able to do and how much he's able to impact.
Absolutely. And the really cool thing about Cruz is that he's a local guy. You know, he was a Still Valley guy. And there's a lot of talent in the middle of this defense where all of the movement happens. Like, the outside corners are very important, and we'll see how they perform as well. Rylan Gandy's a big name to watch out there because everyone's expecting him to be the next MJ/Marquez/AJ Woods, the guy, the next main corner that's going to lead the secondary out there. But in the middle part of the defense, the linebackers, the safeties, they are the moving pieces that blitz, that tackle, the stop the run, and that cover the middle part of the field and also protect against the deep ball a lot more often. So you need that to be a deep group that has a lot of players rotating. Right now, Braylon Lovelace has looked really good at inside linebacker. He might be playing more of the Mike this season. Brandon George returned this past year. He's been helping there. Kyle Lewis has looked good there. We'll get to see them. And then the rotation of safeties, Javon McIntyre, Donovan McMillan, PJ O'Brien, along with Cruz Brookins. And there's this guy, Jesse Anderson, that's playing very well. We talked to the players and they told us how he had a pick six and a fumble recovered for a touchdown in one of their Saturday scrimmages recently. They have a lot of guys that they're very excited about. And that's a good thing in these spring practices for what are very important positions in a very aggressive defense.
Yeah, I think the thing I'm most looking forward to this Saturday is the battle, too. Is last year during the spring game, we got it was defense versus offense. This year, it's truly blue gold. So it's not like we're going to have to wait to see some of these quarterbacks, some of these other players take reps. They're going to be playing from the jump. You mentioned the quarterback or Nate Yarnell specifically, but I'm excited to see how some of these other guys step up. So what is Christian Veyer going to do? What is Eli Holstein going to do? And, you know, I just like that we're going to be able to see two like going at each other. It's not just defense versus offense. We're really going to get to see all of the pieces going head to head. And that's just exciting. And I think that's exciting for Pitt fans too, especially because, like you mentioned, it gives a glimpse of this brand new offense that we haven't seen before. And I do want to warn Pitt fans, it's not going to be pretty, likely. It likely won't be pretty just because they've only had a couple of weeks to kind of implement a brand new offense. You're still going to get some flashy plays. You're still going to get some moments, but it is a very fast-paced offense that likely with only a few weeks is going to lend itself to some errors, which this defense, who knows what they're doing because they've been doing it for years, is going to take advantage of. But I, at the same time, I think it's going to be fun. I think it's going to be exciting. And it really marks the beginning of this new era for Pitt.
Absolutely. One thing that was fun and definitely was exciting was the Women's Final Four, which you got to cover live. I was watching from home, enjoying it and not having to write about it or cover it. So Leanne wanted to ask us, because, you know, we said you'd be on the show. So we're going to get the person who covered it live. What were your thoughts on how the Women's Final Four played out? You had NC State lose to South Carolina in the Final Four on one bracket, and then LSU lose to Iowa. That LSU lose. That was the Elite Eight. It was UConn losing to Iowa in that side of the bracket. What was your opinion on how the three games played out and the way that things shook out with South Carolina taking it all?
I gotta start with talking about UConn Iowa and the fact that Nika Mule was able to do what she did against Caitlin Clark. I mean, Caitlin Clark had 21 points total in that game, which, for reference, in the championship game, she scored 18 points in a quarter. Mm-hmm. So Nika Mule, wow, was insane. It was just the first game, or the I didn't pay too much attention to the NC State South Carolina game, just because I was doing a bunch of other things trying to get ready for the game that I was covering, because I was sent with the intention of really covering Caitlin Clark specifically and the moment that she is having. And so, you know, first game, I loved the fact that the storyline was Paige Beckers versus Caitlin Clark, but that's not how the game shaked out. And I liked that a lot. I liked that we saw players like Hannah Stolke, players like Aaliyah Edwards, all of these people like step up it wasn't necessarily the Caitlin Clark and the Paige Becker show. And I thought that was really, really cool, especially because that is how the media, even me, I wrote about it, was painting it. But it wasn't. I think that was just a beautiful example of how much it's not just one player. And then, you know, whether you think at the end was a foul or not, I mean, it was a foul. Should they have called it or not is the better question. I think it was a great game, and that's what people wanted out of that game. And then it led to just a beautiful rematch between South Carolina and Iowa, in which no team really had the advantage until South Carolina pulled away with it in the fourth quarter. But even then, like, Iowa got within five with like 5 minutes to go. And I don't know, it was just a beautiful display of the sport that is growing. I'm very happy for South Carolina and Raven Johnson and Dawn Staley to get that win, because an undefeated season is insane. I also think, you know, there's a lot of conversations about Caitlin Clark, and is she still a legend in the sport even without a ring? And I think absolutely. I don't think you can really deny her impact on the sport just because she didn't get a championship ring. But like I said at the top of the show, it was very cool as a woman in this industry to be part of this historical moment and to see it all play out and get the chance to watch it all. Crazy weekend. I wasn't supposed to be there, and then all of a sudden I was there, and I'm so grateful for it. But that's kind of my spitball thoughts. I kind of went on a tangent there.
No, that's fine. I thought it was very good to just hear that from being a young woman, being able to cover, and I mean, those were iconic games that you saw there. And like, for as controversial as the call was at the end of the UConn Iowa game, controversial. Someone put this very well. In fact, it was one of my predecessors, Craig Meyer, said this. He's like, when you see people complaining about the calls in a women's basketball game, you know that it's making progress, because that's what they do in all the major sports that they talk about. And I will say this: I agree, like, by the letter of the law, that was a foul. But the legitimate complaint that I think everyone had was Iowa did that all game, and there wasn't one time it was called. And even did it in the championship game, where you could see moving screens and just leaning and elbows and everything. Very much what everyone said, that you can't do that when UConn did it. And there was a couple times where Dawn Staley was just like, you could see visibly, like, all right, We get it. There's just different rules. We're just going to have to play around them. And that's, I think, another testament to how great of a coach she is, that she got her players to stay focused, and how great of a team South Carolina was, as they proved they were the best team in basketball this year. They were undefeated, wire to wire. I think that hasn't happened for like 7 or 8 years in college basketball. Felt like at one point in time it happened all the time, because UConn was just unstoppable for quite some time. But point being, I thought that, you know, when moments like that are the talk of sports, even if they're controversial, it shows people are definitely watching. People are definitely invested. I was at Cork Harbor, I think it was called, in Lawrenceville, and there was a very large crowd of fans highly invested into the game in Pittsburgh. In fact, our guy Josh Axelrod was there covering it and wrote a story about it. It was an event. It was something that a lot of people wanted to take in, and a lot of people, there were Caitlin Clark jerseys, but there were also, it was funny, I thought the crowd would be entirely about Caitlin Clark. There was a big portion of people that were like, no, we want South Carolina to end this. So like, I thought that was very interesting.
And I think that's what's really cool, is we're seeing, you know, there's always been rivalries in these sports, but we're seeing people that aren't necessarily diehard Iowa or South Carolina fans just get so invested in the game. Like, I think I mentioned it in my story yesterday. You know, that crowd, it wasn't just in the arena, in Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse, sellout crowd of 18,300 people. And it wasn't just Iowa and South Carolina fans. There was an NC State contingent there, decked out in their NC State at the championship game. But there were a lot of people that were just wearing Final Four shirts or just women's sports shirts. Like Jason Sudeikis was there, which was, I love Jason Sudeikis. So that was really cool to see him.
Yeah,
he
is awesome.
I didn't actually see him. But like wearing a everyone watch women's sports shirts. Like, I think that was the coolest part to me, is of course the South Carolina and Iowa fans are going to come out, but it was the fact that there were so many just women's college basketball fans in that arena. That was just so cool to see, because this sport really has grown. I think I tweeted it, or I know I tweeted it. I would love to see, I don't love basketball games in a football arena, but I would love to see a women's game in one, just to see how many people come. Because I think we've seen this year and in previous years, if you give them the opportunity, people will show up. People will watch.
Absolutely.
I mean, ESPN's biggest non-football broadcast happened.
Yeah.
That's crazy. And it was a women's game.
And it was a women's game.
So cool.
I agree. I feel you on the part of I've always hated the football stick. Put it in a basketball arena. I also just think about, as a player, like, if you're diving for the ball and you see how much lower the floor is from the court whenever they do that, I just think like that's such a dangerous way to play. Like that they can lead to such a bad injury. Granted, I guess it hasn't led to too many, so you know, maybe I'm just overcaring about that. I've always felt like, play basketball in a basketball arena. But I totally feel you. I would wonder, like, if you put it in the Superdome, if you put it in, you know, one of the, like, you know, one of the bigger arenas, if you put it in a major football stadium, what would that be like? How many would it sell out, and you know, what kind of attendance would that be?
Iowa did that. Iowa had a game in Kinnick, and Kinnick sold out 55,000 people at that game. So what happens if you add an even bigger arena and you have a headline game like South Carolina and Iowa?
Right.
But again, like you mentioned, I don't love basketball games and football arena. I love the people that come out, but like not my favorite.
Absolutely. Because it also makes watching it hard. Like when you get them high up seats, you like, those are ants.
You're busting out the binoculars.
You gotta bust out the binoculars. It's different from football. But anyways, it was a spectacular weekend, and you're absolutely right about Caitlin Clark too. Like, it doesn't matter. And I thought it was very classy of Dawn Staley to be like, that woman's still like one of the best players. She's one of the most one of the greatest of all time of our sport. She lifted us up, and you know, everyone's rooting for her. I want to get your opinion on this, and add my question to the mailbag here. A lot of people have been talking about how players like Diana Taurasi, Breonna Stewart, and a lot of other professional WNBA players have been kind of like saying, like, Caitlin Clark's good, but like, it's not going to be easy when she comes into the league. And there have been some people who said, like, man, they're just haters. They're hating on her. They're jealous of what she can get. And Abby, just I don't get the sense that it's hate as much as it's like this kind of happens to every superstar that comes from college basketball. Is that the case, or am I not seeing that the right? Is this a hate situation that maybe I'm not seeing?
I don't know. I think Caitlin Clark knows that it's going to be an adjustment. I don't think pointing it out is really necessary. I don't know if it's hate, because I just don't know. And there is a very controversial topic in general, but at the same time are these players saying this to other women that are entering the NBA? I don't know. And like Caitlin Clark, yes, she became a supernova in this sport because of the records she has broken. But that doesn't take away from the other amazing players that we're seeing entering the NBA draft. Like Angel Reese is the one that comes to mind. I'm sure Camila Cardoso, I don't think she's officially announced she's doing the draft, but I'd be shocked if she wasn't. I think the thing is that it's interesting to see they're not saying that to any of the other greats in the sport, so that makes me wonder how much of this is, I don't think it's jealousy, but I think how much of this is just specific to Caitlin Clark. But at the same time, I had this conversation with my mom, is we're talking about Caitlin Clark more than we're talking about other people, because Caitlin Clark has done stuff in this game that no one else has ever done,
right?
And that's the difference, is everyone, Angel Reese, Juju Watkins, Paige Beckers, Caitlin Clark, everyone has had a hand in the growth of the sport. Caitlin Clark is the biggest name right now because of the record she's broken, because of what she's been able to do. But also, and this is not her fault at all, the media has just latched on to her.
Absolutely.
And so I feel like that aspect is rubbing people the wrong way. And it's frustrating that they're taking it out on her, because it's not her fault that the media has decided to latch onto her and cover just her. I mean, there were multiple stories, ours included, where Caitlin Clark was the headline, even though she lost. And that's just, you know, running with the trends a little bit. So I don't know. It's interesting. I think Caitlin Clark knows that it's going to be difficult. I don't think anyone needs to tell her that. But it does make me a little sad. Like, support women. Like, come on, guys. Let's not take away from what she has done. So that's kind of my take. But it's convoluted and controversial. So who knows?
Yeah, indeed. I mean, and again, we can't. You know, directly know everyone's intent in every statement, but I hear the point is like, do we need to do that right now? But I wonder if part of it is because of how the media is focused on her. And you know, we're seeing it with UConn's and the men's. There's people saying like UConn would make the playoffs of the NBA right now. No, they would not. They would get bullied out of the. And I think it's just that natural thing where like whenever there's someone so dominant in college, someone somewhere wants to push the conversation. What if they were in the pros right now? Would they dominate? And I think if that's what's sparking some of their responses, I totally get it. But if it is coming from the blue, it does make you wonder, like, hey, why can't we just celebrate this amazing, iconic sports hero right now that is lifting up the entire sport? But those were our questions for the Pitt Mailbag Show, which kind of turned to a college mailbag show. But hey, it's the off season, baby. We having some fun. From Chris Carter and Abby Schnabel, thanks so much for tuning in. Remember to read all of our work at post-gazette.com. Find us here on your favorite podcasting apps. We have new content coming out every single day of the week from all of our different Pittsburgh sports writers at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, as well as our Monday, Wednesday, Friday episodes of the North Shore Drive podcast. We'll be keeping you up to date all week long, and the Blue Gold game is Saturday for all you Pitt fans. But also, Abby has plenty of things to cover, as well as Pitt Volleyball is going through their spring schedule. So stay tuned for all your Pitt information right here from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Thank you for checking out this content from Post-Gazette Sports. If you watch this video on YouTube, please like the video and subscribe to our channel. For all of the sports coverage the Post-Gazette has to offer, visit post-gazette.com.